I didn't give Tyler any time. A review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week we will be, not each week, occasionally. We will
it's
be
breaking.
It's been a while. We'll be breaking down a different production, a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like. And this week we watched John's pick, Dead Poets Society. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists I have with me to help break this down today.
As usually, it's Samuel.
As often, it's Tyler.
It's John.
And then, of course, we have a friendly face on the podcast.
It's Mimi. I'm not a mad artist, but I dream of being... I'm just kidding.
Mad artist
I sponsor.
Yes,
and
a mad artist adjacent.
And there.
Mimi is next to mad artist.
Well, I believe all of us had seen this before, except for Tyler and Samuel.
Facts.
So, John, since this was your pick, how'd you get exposed to this?
Believe it or not, I think it was in, like, my ninth grade literature class.
Okay,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Because it was one of those days where the teacher said, I have nothing prepared for you guys today. Just watch a movie. And so, like, we spent, like, two class periods just watching Dead Poets Society, and I was like, this movie's good. And I bought it off YouTube.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. My exposure was also in high school. I don't remember what grade, but it was definitely an English class. And I had the same experience where, you know, I don't know if it was all in one day or if it was split up, but I watched it and was like, this movie's really good. And then I didn't watch it again until we had to watch it for the podcast. But I was interested in how much I remembered, which was pretty cool. What about you, Mimi, since you saw this before?
I saw it in school, too, but I feel like I saw it multiple times, and then I just would watch it on my own all the time, too. It's just so good. Robin Williams is a treasure.
Anything with Robin Williams is incredible. Well, boys, that hadn't seen this before, had y'all heard of this? What did you know about it before going in?
Honestly, I knew really nothing about it, except that it was a Robin Williams movie. I had heard the name, but the context for what this movie was, I kind of had no idea going in.
Okay.
I am not too dissimilar from Samuel. I knew it was a good movie. I knew Robin Williams was in it. I knew it was going to make me cry. And that was, that was pretty much it. I had no idea. I also got Dead Poets Society confused with The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Which is a substantially different movie.
Vastly different.
Vastly, vastly different. Because
I don't know that you could get actually two more opposite films.
Because, like, I was like, oh, Dead Poets Society. That's, like, in my head, I was like, wait, is that, like, the lead-in to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? So it's, like, the poets first, and then the extraordinary gentlemen. I thought they were connected, and then when I found out they have nothing to do with each other, I was like, this is a different movie. And I was adjusting as the movie was going. I was like, oh, like as the intro sequence was playing, I was like, I really don't think this is it.
Well, this one...
Moriarty shows up. It's crazy.
I was like, whoa.
Well,
there
this,
he is.
This one came out in 1989. It was directed by Peter Weir, written by Tom Schulman, and stars Robin Williams as John Keating, Robert Sean Leonard as Neil Perry, and Ethan Hawke as Todd Anderson. You can watch this with a Paramount Plus or Apple TV subscription, or buy or rent it basically everywhere. And the IMDb summary for this says, Maverick teacher John Keating uses poetry to embolden his boarding school students to new heights of self-expression. Samuel.
Alrighty, so Peter Weir, the director of this film, is becoming a staple on Bannerbox. This is not his first movie that we have done, nay, nor is it only his second movie that we've done. This is the third Peter Weir film that we have done on Banterbox.
What were the other ones?
The Truman Show and Master and Commander of the Far Side of the World.
What? Okay.
How about that?
We don't necessarily need to relitigate a lot of his work. Most of it is stuff that none of us have ever heard of, except for kind of his big ones. The other big movie of his and the last film that he has done was in 2010.
The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
The Way Back.
The Way Back.
Don't know what that is.
The
writer, Tom Schulman, this was his first screenplay that he'd written, and he won the Academy Award for it. Spoilers.
How about that?
So
spoilers for my award section.
But after that, he followed this up with what could not be more different, but equally well received, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh my gosh, he's all over the place.
And then his career gradually went downhill, as I want to see if any of y'all have heard of any of the other movies he's written. Medicine Man, Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag, Holy Man, and Welcome to Mooseport.
I want to watch Welcome to Mooseport immediately.
Let's go ahead and end the episode.
I mean, here's the thing. Tyler, you weren't here when we watched the Moose movie, were you?
Yes, I was.
Who wasn't here? I wasn't here. You weren't here. You missed it.
I missed it.
We got to watch that. Because were you and Colton there for that?
Definitely.
Okay, yeah. So, John, you're the only one who missed it. And it's an incredible experience.
I forget where I was, but y'all, I listened to the podcast and I was like, wow, I really want to watch them.
Sometime next year, when we've kind of forgotten what the movie is, we're gonna sit down and we're gonna watch that movie again, because that was incredible. Okay, so does anyone have any sort of broad thoughts that they want to address here at the beginning before we dive into the plot?
This movie's not very good. No, I'm just kidding. This movie was really good. I really, really enjoyed it for my first time being exposed to it. My overarching thoughts are just what a captivating and my favorite thing a movie could possibly be, dripping with charisma from start to finish. It was another thing that I've praised before for other movies. It was an airtight script. It did not leave anything in that did not need to be there. And it just had a really, really good pacing to it, a really good flow. I just thought from top to bottom, this was a fine movie. It was very, very good.
Yeah. This is one I was very just excited to do. I don't know. I know that John had specifically requested that we do, instead of just the quick review right after doing a full one. And it's just cause there's a lot to talk about, but it's specific moments kind of as we go through. So does anybody else have any overarching thoughts before we dive in?
A really good movie. I think the most impressive thing about it was the script. I mean, the writing, like you were saying, it's just on point. Nothing wasted, nothing kind of out of order, and yeah, really good.
Yeah, either of y'all have anything?
The only thing I'll say is that watching it this time I've watched it a bunch of times, I got to see the finer details, which I'll talk about later, but also the fact that Robin Williams passed away due to suicide, this hit in a whole different way, because I hadn't really seen it since then, I don't think, or just as an adult. I watch the performance, and I do remember when he passed away, a lot of that day people were posting my captain. That was the thing.
That was a huge thing.
Yes.
The day he passed away, that was all over everywhere.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And so that, that final scene for sure hits a lot harder now. Because again, I haven't watched this since, I'm pretty sure he was still alive the last time I watched this. So, watching that scene, I was like, ooh, all right.
it's a little rough. Does anybody know or remember when he actually passed away? What year was that?
2015? 2014?
I think I was in high school when that happened.
It would have been 13, high school. 14? It would have been high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
I'm old. I'm out.
Yeah. Just a content warning for this episode. We will be, discussing plot points regarding suicide. So just, be aware that that is a topic for today. There is a word here that this is a total change of tone, but in this first sentence here, it says, in 1959, Todd Anderson begins his junior year of high school at Welton Academy, an all-male preparatory boarding school in Vermont. That is what it says. My brain looked at that and said, an all-male predatory boarding school in Vermont. And I was like, wait, what? And had to reread it and be like, ah, that was just my brain putting a different word in there. All right. And I wanted to share that with all of you, that's what my brain did.
That's awesome.
But yes, assigned one of Welton's most promising students, senior Neil Perry, as his roommate, he meets Neil's friends, Knox Overstreet, Richard Cameron, Stephen Meeks, Gerard Pitts, and Charlie Dalton. On the first day of classes, the boys are surprised by the unorthodox teaching methods of new English teacher John Keating. A Welton alumnus himself, Keating encourages his students to make your lives extraordinary, a sentiment he summarizes with the Latin expression carpe diem, meaning seize the day.
So when I was watching this film, I had a couple of big first impressions. The first one being that it took me a solid 10 minutes to realize they were in America. Because starting out with the whole bagpipes, and then when the guy was up there talking, he was speaking this overbroad tone that sounded very British at first. Then all the kids started talking, and I was all like, wait, what? This is America?
Hey, man, how are you? And it's like, what? Oh, he's from out of town. Yeah, Tom, how are you? Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, he's a foreign exchange student.
There's bagpipes, the headmaster's British. What's happening?
And the second thing that I realized about this film as I was watching is that I actually had been exposed to content about Dead Poets Society before. I believe it's the third episode ever of the sitcom Community is a direct parody of Dead Poets Society.
Yes,
and I did not realize it until I was watching it. The first classroom scene with Keating, I was all like, oh, that's what that was a parody of.
Yes. because that's with,
You're not seizing the day.
Yeah, that's with, and everybody, stand up on your desks, stand up on your desks. And then the guy, like, breaks, his desk breaks and he falls and
it's
a whole thing.
I had completely forgotten
Jeff
about that
to seize the day.
Until Samuel mentioned it, like, 8 times while we were watching it. And I was like, okay, now I'm starting to remember it.
Well, because I looked at her and I was all like, I think that's what that was. And then as soon as he stood up on the desk, I was all like, that's definitely what it was.
Well, subsequent lessons include Keating having the students take turns standing on his desk to demonstrate ways to look at life differently, telling them to rip out the introduction of their poetry books, which explains a mathematical formula used for rating poetry, and inviting them to make up their own style of walking in a courtyard to encourage their individualism. Keating's methods attract the attention of strict headmaster Gail Nolan. Upon learning that Keating was a member of the unsanctioned Dead Poets Society while at Welton, Neil restarts the club, and he and his friends sneak off campus to a cave where they read poetry. So one thing that I love about this movie is I feel like this is not a thing that would ever happen now, and I wish it would. Because I feel like so many guys, especially these kind of like, you know, these like bros, would not just go out in a cave by themselves and just like goof off with poetry and like do things like that. Maybe I'm wrong, but
I wish they would.
That's what I'm saying. I wish they would. And like, that would be so cool. And so I was watching it and I was like, these guys are like really good sports, like coming out with their friend who's just like, I want to do this thing. Like,
yes.
Let's go. And then like, you know, making jokes here and there, but then, like, actually buying into it and bringing their own, like, original stuff, even if it's just goofy, and, like, getting really into it, dancing around, singing songs, and I'm like, dude, this is, like, the height of friendship right here. I love it.
Well, that was one of the things that I really liked about the movie is that, you know, we'll get to the big dramatic, you know, climax of the movie, where the climax, I will spoil and say, I had predicted the climax. I knew as soon as they said Big Sad in the middle of the movie, I was at like maybe 15 minutes in, I was like, I know exactly what's going to happen. And I called it. Outside of that, that being the only little like ding, if you will, which I don't even know if that was a ding, the thing that completely caught me off guard was how much the friend group would be drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Like, I thought the whole purpose of the movie was about getting everybody to buy in. I had no idea the movie was going to show you so quickly how in the entire group was, and that made my heart sing. I loved
yes.
that. That made me so happy, and just we got so much time to just watch the kids have fun and really let the majesty of the art that they are witnessing and inhabiting just really take them and change them as people.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to really see that in such a beautiful way that I that entire sequence, like the first half of the movie, I just could not stop smiling. It was so awesome.
Well, and you know, one thing that I absolutely love that it's going to talk about here in a second is Knox's whole side plot of being like way too way too aggressive with like liking this girl that he saw once, but then like my favorite scene of his is when he comes back to all of his friends who are all just hyping him up like, dude, what happened? And he's like and they're like, what'd she say? And he's like, nothing. And they're like, nothing? And he's like, doesn't matter. I told her. That's all I needed to do. And he's like so hyped up. And I'm just like, dude, that's my favorite scene of his. It's so good.
Yeah.
So as the school year progresses, Keating's lessons and their involvement with the club encourage them to live their lives on their own terms. Knox pursues Chris Noel, an attractive cheerleader who is dating Chet Danbury, a football player from a local public school whose family is friends with his. Neil discovers his love of acting and gets the role as Puck in a local production of A Midsummer Night's Dream, despite the fact that his domineering father wants him to attend Harvard to study medicine.
Awful.
Meanwhile, Keating helps Todd come out of his shell and realize his potential when he takes him through an exercise in self-expression, another one of my favorite scenes, resulting in his composing a poem spontaneously in front of the class, making everyone applaud for Todd. That is another one of my absolute favorite scenes in the movie is him just, like, pulling Todd up and being like, I know you don't want to do this. We're going to do it anyway. Yeah. And, like, and then bringing something really interesting out of him that everyone at first is kind of laughing at, but then when he gets into it, they're like, oh, that was actually, like, kind of deep and, like, really cool. Like, okay.
And it was so intense because yes. It just, the whole premise of the movie, the whole thesis is just talking about how art and poetry and just these things that these yuppies don't think has any merit or importance whatsoever. You're watching it form itself in these people. You're watching people drink the Kool-Aid, and it's just, oh man, it's
well, and listening so to awesome. To Keating talk about it as well, because who was it that was talking to him about, like, you know, okay, but like, it's not, you know, it's not the same.
It was
the other teacher.
It was another teacher. It was
I don't remember.
He taught history.
Teacher.
I don't remember his name, but
yeah, and then Keating.
They were at dinner.
Yeah, and Keating essentially being like, no, you're right, no one's gonna, like, save a life with poetry, but it is how we live. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we can survive, or we can actually experience the life that we're in. And I'm just like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
'Cause that really is, like, you know, kind of the defense that all artists have to make to people in their lives to give it validity. Is, hey, yeah, I get that this isn't, you know, this isn't medicine, this isn't law, this isn't something that's gonna, you know, probably make me a ton of money or anything like that, but this matters to me, and it could matter for other people. But Charlie publishes an article in the school newspaper in the club's name, suggesting that girls be admitted to Welton. Nolan paddles Charlie to coerce him into revealing who else is in the Dead Poets Society, but he resists. Which, that was another just awesome moment from Charlie.
Yeah.
When he walks back and they're all just standing there expecting him to have turned them in. And he just steps in. And what was his name?
He said, damn it, Neil, it's Nwanda.
Yeah, it's Nwanda. That was his name. Because that's what lets all the guys know, nah, I didn't say anything.
Of course,
like,
not.
Oh, it's so awesome. Which that scene is like, I was a young child right as they were getting rid of, like, paddling in schools in my town. So, like,
what?
Teachers still carried paddles around my school.
Jeez.
And so, maybe not up here, but where nope. I grew up, they did.
Paddling was a thing in my school.
Yeah. Well, love that.
What? The joke definitely. Is he's homeschooled.
And it was a thing.
But, like, so that scene, for me, absolutely. I was watching and I was like, and I was like, you know, this is so brutal now, but I remember as a kid, like, not thinking that that was that intense. Granted, I never had to have that happen to me, but I know kids that did. I mean, yeah, never
how
that intense,
different
though.
Things would be.
How different.
Yeah, all I know is from my upbringing, if a single teacher even thought about, like, raising a hand, all hell would break
loose. Oh, yeah, and let me be clear, of course, same.
Right, right. But your teacher hit you.
Yes. 100%. My teacher did give me spankings. Yes.
Okay.
So did the principal. And actually, so did the principal's father. It's crazy.
Wow.
Everybody just got
hit.
Everyone got
hit. I got hit by the principal's dad. What?
Happened to be my grandfather.
Yeah, it was my grandpa, but still.
Even the lunch lady got it on.
No, but Nolan also speaks with Keating, warning him that he should discourage his students from questioning authority. Keating admonishes the boys in his manner, warning that one must assess all consequences. Neil becomes devastated after his father discovers his involvement in the play and demands he... Yes?
I'm sorry, but we're brushing over a really important part because holy smokes. So I'm sitting here watching Nwanda do this whole to-do, this big prank where he's got the telephone and he's just like, hey, we think you should let girls into Dalton, right? And
Welton,
whatever. Dalton's something else. Anyway.
Dalton is his last name.
There you
go. Is that character's last name.
How about that? Crazy how that works. So he's doing the whole bit, and I'm sitting here going, okay, this is really interesting because this is showing what too much looks like. Right? This is showing them taking it too far. Clearly inspired by Robin Williams' character, Keating, right?
Yeah.
Clearly inspired by Keating. So I'm like, okay, interesting. You've shown all the good sides. Now you're showing the bad sides. How is Keating going to navigate this? And he did it in the most amazing way possible, which was, let me drop the hammer right now. What you did was wrong and bad, and I do not condone it. It's like, I thought you would like it. I do not like that. That is ridiculous. Because the joke was not that funny. And, like, him making, like, you know, if you had said collect call from God, then it would have been funny. Right? So it's still acknowledging and appreciating the humor and having that levity and that charisma. And it just, like, it is the best way to discipline a child, which is to be like, this is why this is bad. Let me explain to you why this is bad. And then leave it with a little something-something to try and get you to think and also get you to laugh. It is, like, textbook discipline 101, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And it just made me... Oh, man, this movie's so charming.
Am I right or wrong that the name Keating is actually the name of a very well-known poet?
I believe so.
I think so.
I think it is.
I think we studied it briefly, I think, in our performing literature class.
Mimi's gonna look it up.
Anthony Kiedis is in Red Hot Chili Peppers.
No. I'm pretty sure Keating is an actual, like, well-known poet. I don't know if he's the one that wrote, like, The Lamb and The Tiger.
Oh, we're thinking of John Keats.
John Keats, that's who it is. Yep, but spelled the same way. Yeah,
John Keats spelled the same way with an ing at the end.
No, I meant the K-E-A-T is spelled the same. Neil becomes devastated after his father discovers his involvement in the play and demands he quit on the eve of the opening performance.
Freaking Red from That 70s Show, dude.
Here's the thing. Yes, that's Red from That 70s Show. Here's the thing. I don't get that because at this point, all the quote-unquote wasted time has already been done. And all you're doing is giving your son a bad name with all of these, like, other people that he's gonna let down. Why would you want that?
Y'all ready?
Oh, well, I know what Samuel... Are you gonna say the thing you were saying to me?
Expanding on some of it, because it's not about that.
Oh, okay.
Because... Yeah.
It's about him disobeying him, right?
Because he is his child. He is paying for every single aspect of his life. He explicitly told him not to take part in something, and then he did. Mm-hmm. I think he was right to tell him he couldn't do the show.
Oh, no, that I completely disagree with.
I think Red, for lack of a better term, this is my big take on this film, is that I actually...
He agrees with all the bad guys.
I think everybody went too far. Mm. But I think that Keating absolutely acted inappropriately in this movie. And I think he was right to get fired. That being said, I also think that the teachers obviously took things too far. Mm-hmm. And obviously Red was an asshole. But, like, in that specific instance, yes. Here's the thing. I don't think he should have forbade him from doing it to begin with. Mm. But he did, and he's paying for it. So for now, that is his decision. He has every right to make that decision. And even though I disagree with it, he still has every right to do so. And so once it comes down to that, and you learn that you've been disobeyed in that way, yes, you have every right to tell him he's not allowed to do it.
All right, so I'm about to tee off.
me too.
Just because he has the right to do something does not make it right. It's the same thing with, like, the legal system in America. There are things that I believe are you should definitely be able to do without punishment or reprimand from anybody, but is illegal. And there are things that you should not do that are awful that are perfectly legal. And so, for me, like, while yes, he is paying for everything, the problem isn't in the fact that he said don't do this and then he did it. That is the symptom. The problem is the fact that the father is not listening to the son. That's the biggest issue. So,
and I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah.
Let's be very clear. I even said, I think that he was, I think coming in and telling your son that, look, this is exactly what you're going to do, and the son says, hey, I can do this, and if it affects my grade, I'll quit, but, like, let me do this.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, you should let your kids have extracurricular activities. Not
right.
only you should you, but it's important to.
Right.
Two wrongs don't make a right. I think Red was wrong to do it. I think his son was also wrong to then directly disobey his father.
The problem with that is that as a father, even though your son disobeyed you, you're looking at his grades that are sterling, you're looking at his reputation, which is phenomenal, and you're seeing how happy, how genuinely thrilled your child is on stage, disobeying notwithstanding, right? He definitely did, and I do think there should be some level of punishment that comes with that, maybe, but you cannot look at your child that happy when nothing bad happened as a result and go, yeah, all right, you're going to the ranch. Like, for me, like, I fundamentally disagree with that, because first of all, there is no wrong being done other than the fact that he technically disobeyed him, but literally
and also lied to his face.
But none of the fallout had any problem, though. And when you see how happy your son was, and you see how much of a difference that makes for the child, that's when you look inward as the parent and go, maybe I'm taking this too far. And he did, and
yeah.
Look what happened.
And again, he did take it too far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, I'm not disputing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, as Danielle said, I'm not coming down on all the quote-unquote bad guy's side. But I am saying that there's a middle ground. And I'm saying that as much as Red was in the wrong to forbid him from doing it, I think Neil was just as much in the wrong to disobey and lie directly to not only his father, but then also to Mr. Keaton.
Now, you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. And the omelet was great. I think that would have been the pivotal moment. I mean, it definitively was. That was the pivotal moment in their relationship where... the onus was 100% on Red at that point on whether or not he is going to accept his son.
I like that we're just calling him Red.
I don't know.
Like,
we're
just giving up.
The dad. So he's sitting there looking at this,
yeah.
Witnessing all of this. You know, what's wrong is wrong, and what's done is done. You're not. That's all in the past. It hasn't been resolved. But you're looking at your kid who has done nothing wrong in the eyes of the school. Nothing wrong in the eyes of his reputation, and nothing wrong in the eyes of his grades. Yes, he directly disobeyed his dad, and yes, he lied to his face, but when you see why, when you see the actual reasoning for why he did what he did was to prove a point, that onus is on Red to then look at that point being made and accept it, and he didn't. And that's why bad things happen. I think Red is the bad guy.
Mimi, I know you have things you want to say.
So... No, as I have grown up in an authoritarian home, I think if there are rules within reason, if there are rules that are unfair, unjust, and make absolutely no sense, that if you're not putting yourself in danger, you're not hurting other people, like all the reasons you just said. Like, this is a positive thing in his life. His grades weren't affected. He's a stellar kid. You know, in this big community thing, it would affect other people if he quit, like all these things.
Yeah.
I think that a child, like, he's not even a child. Like, he's, you know, they're pretty old. Like, they're at least 16 or over.
Well,
yeah.
Neil was about to graduate.
Okay.
Old enough to be able to start taking some agency in your own life.
Right. I think you have the right to fight against tyranny. But that's my thing.
Let's go, Mimi.
Like, in the past,
revolution.
Like, if I broke... I did break my parents' rules multiple times, and even as an adult, I am like, there are some lessons that I had to learn the hard way, and my parents were trying to save me from possible pain, and I can appreciate that, but some of the rules I broke, I would still break today, and I'm glad I did. And I think that's just becoming an adult, is you make the decision, you go, I don't agree, here's why, and I'm gonna do it anyway. And so, and I'm here for it.
And again,
fight against the man.
I guess here's what I'm saying. I don't even necessarily disagree with that. It all comes down to what Mr. Keating said. You have to be willing to accept the consequences. And I guess that's what I'm saying. If Neil had responded to this by saying, yeah, I lied to you and I did all this and I'm sorry, but it's what I felt like I needed to do, and accepted the consequences of his own actions, that would be one thing.
Yeah, like follow through. If you're going to do right. it, follow through all the way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And especially because, and this is where I want to tread on very, I guess, like, careful ground, because I by no means do I want to get to a dangerous point with this. But, he was a senior or a junior?
Senior. Neil was a senior.
Neil was a senior.
Yeah.
Red had control of his life for 6 more months.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And then Neil could go and do whatever he wanted. All of Red's threats about the next 10 years and all carried zero weight.
So here's... here. Okay.
And that's where it's important. And here's the thing. A lot of that is on Red, because that's something that parents should teach. That's something I just had this conversation with him recently of, you know, an interesting thing with my life is that I moved out when I was 17 and my parents were like, what? And I'm like, because y'all literally taught me that when it's time for me to take agency in my own life, I should. And so I did. And that is something that is on parents to teach. But I guess that's all I'm saying is that if you want kids to break the rules, and this is kind of my problem with Mr. Keating, because I think that he knew too much and did too little, and I absolutely don't blame the school for firing him, because if you have a teacher who is aware of a club that is breaking the rules, like, every single night, leaving school grounds, doing who knows what, I know he knows he thinks he knows what they're doing, but you know, in a school like this, in a private school like this, in a preparatory school, a boarding school, you know that kids are leaving school grounds every night and you don't do anything about it? Yeah, that teacher gets fired. 10 times out of 10 at every boarding school ever. And he should. He absolutely should.
But he inspired them.
And yes, but he still should have been fired. And that's what I'm saying, is that all the concepts in this movie I'm all for, but you have to be ready and okay with accepting the consequences of your actions. And that's something that is mentioned in the movie, but then they don't really practice what they preach. And I guess that's where I disagree with some aspects of the movie, is I agree with all the ideals, but what's important is that, yeah, if you break the rules, if you do all this stuff, you're going to have to accept the consequences of that, and you should accept it with a smile on your face, because you know that you did it.
But the man is wrong.
So here's my point. Getting back into things. So you were talking about he only had to deal with his dad for 6 more months. So many people don't believe that or feel that way, though.
Yep.
And so while you were raised that, yes, you can take your own agency at any time, and the second you're 18, you are not... like, you know, you do not have to cower to your parents' demands. Not everybody was raised that way, and so not everybody feels that way. And especially when it's like a family name kind of thing, where he's like, I worked so hard, you have to do this because I worked super hard, and he feels like he owes it to his dad, but to pay his dad back in that way, he would have to give up every passion and love that he has in his life for the rest of his life. Because his dad wasn't just saying, like, you're going to go to this school for the next 6 months. He was like, you're going to go to this school and you're going to be a freaking doctor, which is planning out the rest of his life. And so clearly Neil was not raised to believe that he had any agency at any point. So him taking this one moment of agency was really the only time that he felt like he could. And so when his dad was like, yeah, that's over, this is the rest of your life, I'm not surprised that that was his move, because he did not feel like it was just the next 6 months.
Exactly. And I completely recognize that, and that is where we come to my problem with Mr. Keating. Because I could not agree more with the concepts that Mr. Keating was teaching, but with it has to come a lot of other reality checks. With the idea of seize your destiny, do what you want to do, find what makes you happy, find your passions, all things I believe in, but with that has to come the concept of, and that means you have to take control of your reality. You have to take agency in your own life. If you're telling somebody, hey, you should do, like, just do whatever feels good. Do what feels good to you. Seize your passions. That's awesome. But then, like, don't really actually take any agency in your life. That's what's going to lead to situations like Neil.
Yeah, I'll go after Mimi.
Okay, so I guess two things. One, his father was going to send him off to military school. He basically said, you're packing your bags and you're going here. I don't know how that works with, like, could he leave? Did he feel like he could? How does those schools back then work? Like, do they enroll you in something like that where you can't just up and be like, I'm out of here, I'm 18?
Because that's true. I don't, we also know. Don't really know how the system works.
I didn't know that. So he definitely was like, this is the next, you will be at this military school for, sound like years?
Ten years.
So no, that is not what he was saying.
That actually is what he
said. No, hang on. No. He was saying you're going to go to the military school,
mm-hmm.
to finish out his high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you're going to go to Harvard, I think he said.
Something like that.
And get a doctorate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to take 10 years to become a medical doctor. That's mm-hmm. what he was saying.
Yeah.
Not mm-hmm. that you're going to go to military school for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Military school is only going to be 6 months.
Right.
And then after that, he was saying you're going to go to Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, that's your choice. You're an adult. You make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
The next 6 months of military school, no, you're a high schooler. It's not your choice. That's your parents' choice. After that, it's completely, you have the right to say no.
But how would Neil have known that? Like, if he was indoctrinated from such a young age that what his dad says goes, how would Neil know that he has that agency to be able to fly the coop?
Because Mr. Keating should have. That's such an important part of the seize the day, seize your own destiny philosophy. That's what I'm saying. Is that such an important part of things that was never delved into, and that's setting emotional kids up for failure.
The only thing I'll say to that is, I think if Mr. Keating knew how deep and what was going on behind closed doors, I think he would have. I don't think Mr. Keating knew the genuine true extent of how much his words were affecting the kids outside of school. Like, I know he knew that that the kids were running off, but did he know that they were going to the cave and doing all that stuff? I don't know if he knew that. Did he know that?
Yeah, explicitly.
They never told him explicitly, but it could have been easily assumed that because he told them where the club is, that could be where they... But they never said to him, we're going to the cave.
But like, that's also harmless. That. I think the whole seizure day thing was... His whole point was to get the kids to challenge the authority. His whole point was to get them to look at the world through a different set of eyes.
And again, I'm not... Here's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is Mr. Keating should have... Everything that he taught was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then follow it up with, now kids, remember, right now you are minors. You're in high school. So yes, authority has complete power over you right now. So in the moment... You need to understand that. And if you decide to go outside of that, you need to be willing to accept the consequences that come with it if you're caught. But this is all important things to learn so that once you are of legal responsibility for yourself, once you are an adult, you can live your life unfettered by these philosophies. That's what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, what? 2 points. One I didn't get to earlier, but I will. But the other one point is that if, let's say he did, he's like, okay, I only have to make it 6 months at the military school. They have, I assume they're probably cut off from the world. they probably can maybe exchange letters, maybe question mark. I'm sure they're pretty, like, locked down, you know, no contact. More than likely, that's probably why he's sending him there. So he couldn't have set himself up for finding housing. Let's say, like, he has to, as soon as he steps out of that school and graduates, he now has to find a place to live. And he doesn't even have time to prep with that. Maybe he could go to friends' houses, or he would just be homeless on the street and be like, screw you, Dad, I'm out. So yes, he could have done those things, but he also had no prep time. He basically would have to, like, graduate and be homeless and then find his way to be independent, because I guarantee his dad would have kicked him out of the house. But there's, like, no prep time because he has no contact with the outside world. I think that would have been really hard. So I could see how he could get to a point of hopelessness and despair. But yes, he could have done that. But I feel like he probably didn't have the wherewithal to, like, figure all that out because, you know, he was, yeah. You know. But he could have done that. So that's that point. Second point is Mr. Keating. I do agree he should have taken more responsibility, but I do think that when you have 100 voices telling you one thing, he was the one voice. So I feel like he didn't feel like he had to counteract that because there's 100 other people telling them to the opposite. And also, they didn't let him finish out the year. What's if in the second half of the year, he was, like, also
In today's world, 2023, yeah. Somebody's teaching at a high school, well, let's say it's a magnet school, right? Or something like that. Even not a boarding school. And a teacher knows, because, again, let's not kid anybody, Mr. Keating knew what was going on.
Right.
And he knows that that's happening. He knows that kids are going off campus out of their rooms at midnight, and he doesn't do anything about it. He doesn't report it. And that comes out. He gets fired on the spot.
In 2023. But remember, this is an 80s film. It was a lot different.
Oh, it was not in the 80s. Saying. This is in the 50s.
Here's what
it's
I'm saying.
Placed in the 50s.
Way off. I'm saying even more so then.
That was back when kids could go and...
No.
It's not about the kids doing. It's
no.
about the
it's not about though. The kids. Again... There are two very distinct, different ideas here. Mm. Yes, the kids going and doing that, I have no problem with. Mm. Honestly, I don't. That's something I would have done, 100%.
Right.
I did
right.
plenty of
That's
stuff like that.
That's kids
being
kids at that point.
That's kids
yeah.
being
kids. But as an adult who is responsible for those kids, any teacher who knew about that and didn't report it from 1700s to today gets fired. Because the students' parents are paying those teachers' salaries to be responsible for their kids. So Mr. Keating absolutely should have been fired the day it got figured out, and there's no... The school was not wrong or evil to fire Mr. Keating. They were absolutely... Every school ever does that.
Here's my two counter-arguments to that. The first is... from a logistics and realism standpoint, yes, I actually agree. But this is also a movie, and the purpose of Mr. Keating and how things went was a lot more metaphorical as opposed to, like, logistical, right?
And again, I feel like this is getting lost in the sauce, but, like, I'm on board with everything he was teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I'm completely on board. I'm just saying that...
You shouldn't have done it, and they shouldn't have listened. No, I'm kidding.
No, and if the movie was only about the philosophy of it and the metaphorical aspects of it, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that that's not how the movie was represented. The movie was represented in a very real world's consequences way.
Well, and especially how they ended it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, that's the thing, is this movie, in my mind, is fully a tragedy.
Yeah.
Because, like, the good guys lose at the end, Mr. Keating gets fired. But again, why did he get fired? He didn't get fired because he was being reckless with the students. He got fired as a scapegoat because they blamed him for Neil's suicide. And that's wrong. They shouldn't have fired him for that. They shouldn't have made him... They shouldn't have put the onus on a kid's death on him because it definitively is not his fault. That is Red's fault. That is his father and his parents' fault because they suck. In my opinion... Right? Like, they can't listen to their kid. They can't allow him to express himself. They won't let him any agency in his life whatsoever. They create this environment where the kid is trapped morning, noon, and night in his own skin. He cannot be himself. He cannot express himself. And so he takes things to a pretty intense degree because he's young and impressionable. And then they take the onus and then put that on Mr. Keating. He did not do that. He inspired him. It is on Red and the family for tormenting this kid for 17 years and making him feel like he was trapped. They were the ones that did that. And the reason why I have, if you want to fire him because, hey, he was reckless with the students and he knew they were sneaking out and he was putting them in danger, however you want to phrase it, that is a valid argument. But they fired him because they blamed him, the Mr. Keating, for the suicide. And that, to me, is objectively wrong. They should not have done that. And they knew that. The kids knew that, and the teachers did as well. They're just like, we're going to sweep this under the rug because this is so much easier than having Red's family sue us because they're mad that their kid did something because of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I can agree with that. That, of course, it wasn't Mr. Keating's fault.
Right.
Like, of course. I do think that the movie represented it as more than just that. I took that as being the final straw. Is that they were already because the back half, even before that, they were already doing all these investigations, mm-hmm. even before Neil's death, and they were trying to figure out what was going on, which would have ultimately led to Mr. Keating being fired anyway. This all brought it out, and it was the final straw, and then they fired him. Mm-hmm. And yes, they took that opportunity to scapegoat him, which is of course not right.
Right,
and also, but he would have been fired either way.
And also. That's fair. That's from fair. Any storytelling perspective, you got to take a look at it from what narrative are we telling from what perspective.
That's another one, too.
And here's the thing. We are getting, especially that in particular chunk, we are getting from the Dead Poets Society half. Because if you notice, they don't give us an inside peek at all what's happening with the staff.
Yeah.
Nolan or nobody. So, to sit there and, you know, yeah, the Dead Poets perspective is going to be like, oh, they're putting all this on, you know, on Mr. Keating. It's, you know, it's not his fault. Like, the system is bad. Like, and yes, the system is kind of screwed, but it's a system that, you know, they've established, you know, hard to break the system, right?
Yeah, and the other aspect of it is it being a private school is that ultimately the teachers who are there are up to the parents, up to the people who are paying. And, you know, if during the course of this investigation the parents decided they were uncomfortable with Mr. Keating and wanted him fired.
And again, yeah. I mean, I forget who's, I think it's Knox who mentioned it. Like, whole schools go down for this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, if it came out that they did nothing and, like, reprimanded nothing, it's going to be like, that's a big paying, like, client is going to sit there and say, don't ever send kids XYZ. Like, that's. And for a private school like that, it's not public school. It's going to go down in a blaze of glory for that reason.
Yeah.
Maybe. Last thing I'll say on this, because I feel like I said everything I wanted to say, was just, at the end of the day, it's a battle of ideas. It's the, you know, artists and what they bring, free thinking, versus this rigid old way of thinking of, you know, just stay marching in line, and then those who step out of the line. That's, at the end of the day, it was a battle of ideas. And that's why it's fantastic. So, yeah.
Well, we jumped all around the place, but let me, for anyone who hasn't watched it and wants to understand what we're talking about, Nolan also speaks with Keating, warning him that he should discourage his students from questioning authority. And Neil... he goes to Keating, who advises him to stand his ground and prove to his father that his love of acting is something he takes seriously. Neil's father unexpectedly shows up at the performance. He angrily takes Neil home and has him withdrawn from Welton and enrolled in a military academy. Lacking any support from his concerned mother and unable to explain how he feels to his father, a distraught Neil commits suicide. Nolan investigates Neil's death at the request of the Perry family. Cameron blames Neil's death on Keating to escape punishment for his own participation in the Dead Poets Society and names the other members. Confronted by Charlie, Cameron urges the rest of them to let Keating take the fall. Charlie punches Cameron and is expelled. Each of the boys is called to Nolan's office to sign a letter attesting to the truth of Cameron's allegations, even knowing they are false. When Todd's turn comes, he is reluctant to sign, but does so after seeing that the others have complied and succumbs to his parents' pressure. Keating is fired, and Nolan, who taught English at Welton prior to becoming headmaster, takes over teaching the class with the intent of adhering to traditional Welton rules. Keating interrupts the class to gather his leftover belongings, As he leaves, Todd reveals to Keating that the boys were intimidated into signing the paper that sealed his fate, and he assures Todd that he believes him. Nolan threatens to expel Todd and anyone else who speaks out of line. Despite this, Todd stands up on his desk with the words, "O Captain, my Captain," which prompts Nolan to threaten him again. The other members of the Dead Poets Society, except for Cameron, as well as several other students in the class, do the same, to Nolan's fury and Keating's pleased surprise. Touched by their support, Keating proudly thanks the boys and departs as Todd looks on. And that was Dead Poets Society.
Oh, go ahead, John.
No, and I think that's the big takeaway, is that, you know, the idealism, like, yeah, sure, the good guys didn't win. But I think what's important and what the ending is trying to tell you is that the ideals that Mr. Keating impressed upon them is not something they are going to forget.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
And that is, I think, the overall message of the film, is that, yes, the sciences and maths, from rigorous beating into your brain, you know, multiplication tables from, like, you know, grade 1 to, like, grade 12, they're going to stick with you. And, yes, they're going to be really helpful, and they're going to get you through the real world. But
press D to doubt. Yeah, I'm going to say no on that one.
But it's the art that you experience and make and the liberation that you get from that, that's going to ultimately kind of steer through and kind of stick with you for a majority of your life. And I think that's the overarching premise, that they wanted to sit there and say, yes, like, creativity is going to last a lot longer. Is going to be easier to recall upon, because all those kids are going to remember is how wild this one class about poetry was.
Yeah.
They're not going to sit there and, you know, remember, like, you know, the history. Like, and I mean, again, the perspective of the film, it was shown mostly from Keating's classroom, because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, our narrator is Todd.
It kind of bounces between narration, like, POVs, I feel like. Like, sometimes it's Todd, sometimes it's Neil, sometimes it's Knox.
I think until... Well, again, that depends on the parts, right?
Yeah.
It's a, what's it called? An ensemble piece.
Yeah.
Because we even get some of Mr. Keating's little narration moments. But, I think that's overall, it's like, it's not about winning necessarily, it's about what sticks with you. And that's kind of like, you know, like, as a teacher, like, even from a teacher's perspective, like, what are you imprinting on these kids that's going to stick with them for future generations?
Yeah. And I know for me, those are kind of my favorite kinds of stories, which is where it's not about succeeding at the end, it's about how you were changed throughout. And so even if, you know, the main characters fail, if I can see that they have actively been affected and changed by what's happened, that's a good story for me. I don't need success at the end. I just need growth.
Like, without Mr. Keating, Todd's still the sniveling, shy kid in the front row.
Yeah.
Facts. You know what this conversation just reminds me of? Do y'all remember that viral video of the kid who's, like, talking smack to the teacher? He's like, "You gotta touch these kids' hearts, yo. You can't be handing out a freaking packet, yo. You gotta be listening to them. You gotta talk to them. You can't just be handing out a packet and expecting us to learn. That's not what it's like." She's like, "Get out." And he's just like, "All right, fine." And then you guys have no idea what I'm talking about?
No, I think I've seen it.
That's insane. No, that was a super viral video. It was so funny because it's like everything he's saying,
like,
is 100%
like,
right.
Rips off on, like, math teacher or something.
I 100% agree with everything he's saying. It's the way he says it is so, like, you're missing the mark, but I like the spawn.
Well, he's a little confused, but he's got spirit.
Well, I do have a theory before we kind of move on, which my theory that I was kind of telling to Samuel when he was giving me all of these opinions, I was like, here's my theory, which is that I do not believe that Keating intended on being at the school very long. I think he came in and he knew exactly what his actions were going to cause. I don't think he ever expected this to be the reason that he was fired, but I think he fully expected to be fired. And so when he came in and, like, you know, yeah, okay, he knows that the kids are sneaking out, and he's just like, all right, if that's the reason I get fired, I'm not really shook about it. And then, like, you know, I think he came in, and that's also part of why I theorize that, is, you know, he talks about the woman that he has super, super far away, and he's like, well, yeah, but I just love teaching, that's why I'm here. And I'm like, he's also here because he knew he wasn't going to be here long. He knew this was a short-lived little venture where he could hopefully impart some of his wisdom on these people at his, you know, at his alma mater, and you know, hopefully teach some kids something about his passions, and then, you know, and then go from there. But he did not expect to be here long term. I do not believe
that. I completely agree, just for what it's worth.
Yeah.
I have something. Okay. So, if y'all ever watch this movie again, because I watched it a bunch. I don't remember. I've watched it a lot. So, it was fun because I didn't have to, like, pay attention so hard to, like, the overarching stuff. So, next time you watch it, pay attention to the use of light in it. So, I didn't put it together until the very first scene where they're, you know, they're up at the front, kind of, like, day one. Yeah. And they have the candle. The guy, you know, main guy talking has the candle. Then he hands it off to the first kid. And then they...
You're talking about in the cave?
No, like at the they're all in...
The commencement ceremony.
Yeah.
Okay. So the teacher, the principal has the candle. Then he hands it off to the first kid. And then each kid leans over to the next kid and they light their candle.
Yeah.
So it's the light of knowledge being passed throughout the room. Mm-hmm. And it's coming from the headmaster, of course. And so we see that. So the light of knowledge. And then later on, you see, like, if you notice, like, Keating's room is very bright. He has a lot of lights. He has the windows open. He has, like, a bunch of lights in there. All the other classrooms are very dim and don't have a lot of light in them. He also takes them outside. So there's, like, light there. And then you have the big in the cave. They have that big, like, circle at the top where light is coming down, shining upon them. They also bring in, like, lanterns. So there's a use of a lot of light throughout this. And then, you know, in Puck's stuff, there's some light in the there. And also when Neil, after he passes away, you know, his dad wakes up in the middle of the night, and he turns on his lamp, and he was like, what was that?
What was that?
And then, if you notice, they picked to put him all the way downstairs in his office. Mm-hmm. And he has to walk, they shot him walking down the hall, turning on each light as he goes, and it's showing, like, the light of knowledge of he's coming to wreck, he knows what's happening as he's, like, getting closer.
That's really interesting.
And I was like, like, as I'm watching it, I was like, oh my gosh. So, like, definitely if you ever rewatch it, like, take notice of that, because I was like, oh, because I was wondering about the candle thing, and then it led me down the trail.
Nice.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, if you guys could rename this movie anything else, what would you rename Dead Poets Society?
Helton.
Okay.
The light of knowledge.
Here at the Wall, spelled with two E's. No, that's not what I would name it.
I'm going to take a bit of a deviation from, like, my normal naming conventions, and I think I'm just going to go short and simple. I think I'm just going to go Point Break.
You're literally the
worst. The second you started talking, I knew where you were.
You knew it. You knew it.
You're getting too predictable, Mr. Scott.
It's because you're psychic.
Anyway. Yes. Samuel's face.
This is your first steps. Or it's because you're getting too predictable.
Oh, my goodness.
What would we call it? What would you call it, Mimi?
Why are you passing it to me?
Because I don't want to be the one.
You got anything, John?
I'm also the one sitting here.
Yeah, John. Come on.
I don't think of these.
Yeah,
beforehand.
If we all look at John,
I don't think of these before.
Will that buy us enough time?
I don't think so.
I mean,
they don't buy any time.
So
I'm gonna cut out all this out anyway.
I guess the lame answer I feel like is like, oh, Captain, my Captain, you know,
like
or
that.
Something like that, like, or from like a poem or.
Or
you
just
know,
like, oh, Captain.
That.
Or maybe just, oh.
Oh.
Something like that. Or Nuwanda.
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 Nuwanda forever.
I'm an agent. Carpe diem.
Okay.
What'd you say?
Carpe diem.
Carpe diem.
Oh, yeah, that's true. True.
Although I do like Helton more, honestly.
I like Helton. Oh, God. All of mine are terrible. Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
No. You cannot just keep picking other titles.
I don't know.
My man all of a sudden drops Riverdale.
Yeah.
Just Keating.
Keating? Keating's Revenge.
When in doubt, just go with the last name of the main character.
That's a good point. Perfect. That's good. That's good. I like that. Neil. That's mine.
Bruh.
I don't know. I'm terrible at this game. Let's go on to another segment. This is great content. We all know how good content this is. Sitting around listening to people think.
Well, I went on Amazon. The general consensus by viewers is pretty good. 88% of viewers rated it 5 stars. Let's see if my phone will stay alive long enough to look at these reviews. 12%
of people are stupid.
So, I like this one because it takes a hard left at the end. So this is from Jordan Henry, and this was this year, and it's titled Sweaty Tooth Madman. I'm going with positive first.
Oh, my God.
One of my favorites, always a good cry. Ethan Hawke's Sweaty Tooth Madman scene is incredible. I think a lot of times Dead Poets Society gets written off as, and this is where it starts to not make any sense, gets written off as a boy movie, but it's not a boy movie or a girl movie. It's a human experience movie about the pursuit of passion. It's about life, death, and the belief that we're all capable of doing something meaningful, and thankfully it has nothing at all to do with sports. 5 stars.
What the hell?
It went really off the rails.
No, let him cook.
And I'm only not reading the other one because my phone's about to die. So I had a bunch of negative ones here that all just are insane. So one of them is from an anonymous, and it's titled Robin Williams Almost Makes It Worth It, But Not Quite. Acting in general is cheesy and over the top, not an interesting story premise, and I didn't feel anything for the main characters. The next one was from Jason Wolf, titled Garbage. I love Robin Williams, but this film has more sap than a 100-foot pine. The story is also contrived to a degree that made me think I had seriously missed something. And then Matthew Valley, it was essentially leaving the audience feeling like they should suppress their creative ambitions because society will... dot, dot, dot. I never knew why this movie was so praised. The whole title, and then because society will kill it, and if we follow in the spirits of our ambitions, we are doomed to failure or irrational dreams that result in death with a faded memory we should leave behind.
My brother missed the message.
Yeah, they just all missed the message, 100%.
They are clearly meeks in this situation. They are that guy that ratted out all of them. You are him.
Well, I thought it was Cameron who ratted everybody out.
Oh, is his last name Meeks? Did I make that up?
No. Meeks is the nerd that helps everybody out with their homework.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Meeks. Yeah, I take it back.
Cameron is the redhead that ratted everybody
okay,
out.
Okay, Cameron.
So Samuel did already kind of mention this. It was nominated for 4 Academy Awards and 4 Golden Globes, but it only won 1 Academy Award for Best Screenplay. So, Samuel, don't look at my screen. What do you guys think this is rated out of 100 critically on Rotten Tomatoes?
82.
Okay.
Critically, huh?
I'm gonna say 90 even.
Okay.
Oh, dang you, Sam. I want to have faith in you, man. I want to say 92.
Okay.
Or at least Rotten Tomatoes.
I hate to do this, so my price is right, y'all, and go 89.
Okay, well, it's absolutely meanie, because it's 84.
Woo!
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And now audience score. 16%
of people are stupid.
Now audience score also out of 100.
It's probably higher.
85.
I'm gonna go 89 one more time.
I'm gonna go a little lower, 81.
It's absolutely John Perfect, 92.
Woo!
Let's go. It's that easy.
It's that easy.
Never punished.
And IMDb out of 10.
At least 3.
Give me 7.4.
Okay.
Give me 8.5.
Okay.
7.6.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 9.1.
Well, it's a tie. What did you say again, Samuel? I forgot already.
7.4.
Yeah, so it's a tie between Tyler and Mimi, because it's an 8.1.
Woohoo!
That's why they call me Tyler.
Well, actually, it is just Tyler, because I did math wrong. sorry, Mimi. Okay, well, the budget for this movie was $16.4 million, and it made... $235.9 million.
Yay! We take good movies making money.
Woot woot.
Especially when they're made with heart.
And I've got some just little fun facts here. I had to really pick through because a lot of them were really, like, not fun facts. They were just really boring. So I had to pick through and find some that were at least a little interesting.
Yeah,
so,
still mid-fact.
So Robin Williams considered this movie one of his favorite films he did, and Peter Weir the best director he had ever worked with.
I get it.
Which I thought was pretty sick.
I get it.
Peter Weir chose to shoot the film in chronological order to better capture the development of the relationships between the boys and their growing respect for Mr. Keating.
I love when movies shoot in chronological order.
Same.
Apparently,
absolutely.
He did a bunch of other stuff that I didn't really make note
he's
of, which
so
was he made all the boys room together so that they could bond more
really?
And get closer.
Yeah.
And then to make it more, I guess, intense after Perry dies in the film, he kept the actor like away from the other boys so that they would actually feel like they lost somebody.
Wow.
The scene where Todd Anderson cries outside in the snow was done in one take. It was originally an interior scene, but when it started to snow, Peter Weir thought the scene might have more impact if it were done outside. The snow was already beginning to let up, so it had to be done in one take. Fortunately, Ethan Hawke managed it. So,
wow.
Good for
that's
Ethan.
He certainly did, because that was such an honest performance.
Yeah.
Like, there was no artifice whatsoever. He was just like, it was just a man or a child
just
miserably
grieving,
upset.
Yeah.
Including his last line being, "It's so pretty outside."
Yeah.
And then just breaking down.
Well, there were a bunch of other people that were considered to be the role of Keating. One of them, so this was originally going to be directed by someone named Jeff, I don't know if his name is Canu or Canu. And
what?
He was originally
Can
directing
you?
It with Liam Neeson playing Keating.
no thank you.
And then when Peter Weir came aboard, he was like, no, and put Robin Williams in. But there were two other people that were also considered for Keating. I don't know under which director.
Vin Diesel.
Jeff
no.
Goldblum.
No. It was Bill Murray.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Not a good job.
And Mel Gibson.
We're in the proper timeline. Mel Gibson.
Originally, Keating was supposed to die of leukemia, but director Peter Weir decided to have the story focus on the boys instead of him.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
That would have been a whole different movie.
And the last one I have is that Neil Perry's death was foreshadowed very early in the film. The camera is on him when John Keating tells the class that they will each one day shrivel up, turn cold, and die.
Wow.
I did actually
awful.
Notice that this
I did
time.
Not.
Okay. I noticed that this watch where it focuses on him and Perry is just watching him very, like, innocently. And I was just like, oh my gosh, wow, okay, foreshadowing.
Wow.
Because obviously I knew it was coming. So, let's recast. Who would we be in this movie?
I would really love to see Tyler. I'm gonna be honest. I'd love to see Tyler's Knox.
Me too. I was gonna say the same thing.
Tyler could play most of the boys. Let's be real.
That's very sweet.
You could play Neil very easily. You could play Knox very easily. You could play Charlie very easily. Like,
Knox is Nwanda?
No, Charlie is Nwanda. Knox is lover boy.
Oh yeah, I get that.
Yes.
I put Mimi as Neil.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Me?
I put Mimi as Neil.
I am tragic.
I think...
I honestly think it'd be really funny to see Mimi do pits.
No. No.
Oh my gosh, no.
I changed my...
All right.
I think I think I put Mimi as Mr. Keating.
Really?
I do. Because I think...
Yes.
Especially in this debate, I think Mimi, like, fully... I'm not saying that y'all don't. I'm just saying Mimi gets it and lives it and is it and just fully encapsulates the pathos of Mr. Keating. So I put Mimi there. Not to say that y'all don't. Because of course you do.
Y'all have to get defensive. You can say what you want to say.
I put.
Say with chest.
Oh God, where are you?
I guess by that logic, I'm red. Yeah.
Yes, I was gonna say that.
You kind of have to be now. You kind of have to.
I would have put. I would have stuck with her as Neil and put you as Keating, Tyler. But I could also see that totally flip-flopped.
I'm not opposed to it.
Samuel, I could see Samuel being Nwanda.
100%. And honestly, I would really want to see Samuel play that role specifically because it would be such a departure from, I think, what we get to see your performances.
Yeah.
Like we've never seen you play a character like that.
Yeah.
Like, ever.
But I absolutely could see it.
I put all my money on that you would kill it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think I would want to see that. Where do we put John?
I mean, John could be Nolan.
Which one's Nolan?
The headmaster.
Headmaster.
Nolan, Red, or if we put him as a kid, which kid would we put him in?
I think Todd.
Yes.
Todd.
We have a winner.
I agree.
If you are one of the kids, you are Todd. 100%.
So what do we got? Keating?
Keating, Neil, Todd, Charlie. So who am I?
Tis the question, isn't it?
The most beautiful girl.
No. Here's the thing. I don't hate her, though. She's a good character. I don't hate her.
Although I will say, we are forgetting.
Oh, my gosh.
We are forgetting.
Everyone throw up.
We are forgetting two very important characters.
Whomst?
Well, three, I guess. We're forgetting.
Benina?
The best characters. Benina. Which were the two drunk jocks at the party.
Oh my gosh.
Why am I forgetting? Jen. Oh, yes.
Yes.
I don't want to be any of those characters.
No, no.
It's okay. Rick can play those characters.
Oh, shoot. That's a good point.
Well, we don't know who's here.
Yes.
Otherwise, I'd have to create a whole compendium. I could, but...
I gotta be honest. I would really want to see you as the headmaster.
Oh, I have to be the mean guy. All right.
You do have to be the mean guy because I just think it would be such an awesome dynamic. You know what I mean? I think it would be such an awesome dynamic because it would be full on like Dolores Umbridge.
Yeah, but no one likes Umbridge.
You're missing the point. Everybody freaking despises Umbridge, but we all do it with the understanding that, man, she's an incredible actress.
Well, yeah, because she makes everyone hate her. And you have to have a certain kind of opposite charisma to make everybody hate you.
I don't know if it's opposite charisma or if it's just talent, but that's just me.
I probably would cast Danielle, like, just... Forgetting the rest of the cast, I probably would cast you as Todd. Because I feel like you could do a really good job of, like, the whole transformation that occurs.
Yeah.
I feel like I could see that.
I would have fun with it for sure.
I think you'd also make a good Charlie as well.
I mean, I would have fun with Charlie, for sure. This is one of those tough ones where, like, I feel like we could all play multiple roles in it.
Definitively.
Yeah. This could be shuffled up a million ways and still work.
For sure.
Well, what would be the drinking game for this? We need a shot, a drink, and a finish your drink.
Drink every time that there's a poem read.
Oh, okay, that's pretty good.
Just like a sip. Just a little...
Yeah, just a sip every time.
Take a shot every time they say Carpe Diem.
Ooh, oh, okay.
No, when, no, he, no, okay. When he whispers, do you hear them? Carpe diem.
They
he does that
they,
multiple
they don't
times.
Say it a million times.
They say it a couple times.
No, they say it. They say it
at least like two or three.
I would say put that as finish your drink, and then take a shot. Oh, that's really dark.
No, we're not doing
that.
No, because I thought I was getting my movies mixed up because I was thinking
every time Neil heckles Todd.
Every time he... Oh, like when he's trying to push Todd to, like, be better. Because that only happens, like,
twice.
A couple of times. So that's
like
a good, like, shot
once.
Yeah, two or three times.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Well,
Take a shot and finish your drink and take a sip from somebody else's drink every time Red scowls.
No, God.
We would all be dead.
That's death.
That's death. All right, well, favorite and least favorite moments from this one.
My favorite part was the movie. No.
Great. Podcast over. Go home.
Favorite part of the movie. Does anybody have one? I'm vamping for time.
Because
I keep forgetting we can just edit out the dead space.
So I can go first.
Please, lead the way.
So, I think my least favorite would just be when they had the two girls in the cave because it was just kind of awkward. And, like, I understood the point of the scene, and nothing was, like, super big cringe, but it was, like, and here's the thing, I did appreciate the point of the scene, because the fact that it felt awkward was the fact that they weren't doing it for themselves anymore, and, like, and so I get the point, I just didn't like how awkward I felt watching it, so that's why I would put that as my least favorite, And my favorite would have to be the sweaty toothed madman scene with Todd and Keating in front of the glass. Spontaneous art like that is my favorite thing in the entire world. It's why I love movement as much as I do. And you know, that just that moment of just the art happening in front of everybody, I'm obsessed with that scene. It was amazing.
So, my least favorite part was when he my least favorite part was when he was at the party and he sat next to her while she was sleeping and kissed her on the forehead, and that was I'm not saying he deserved to get beat up, but I'm not saying he didn't.
I will say I didn't remember how that scene went, and I thought he was just gonna straight up like full on kiss her.
If he had full on kissed her on the mouth, he would have deserved
The fact that it was on the forehead, I was like, it's still not great, but it could have been so much
better.
Yeah,
and then my favorite part was when everybody was walking and the two kids weren't, and he was all like, come on, like, get out there. And they were all like, no, this is our artistic expression, is that we're not doing it. We're not going to
perform. Because that was Charlie who did that. Yeah.
And yeah, I love that.
I would probably say my least favorite, and this is... I don't want to coattail Samuel's, but that's a really, really good one for least favorite, because I was like, oh, come on, don't be like that. So to be different, I will honestly say I was not thrilled with the ending. I didn't.
Well, you can't stand unhappy endings. You know that's true.
I can't, but that wasn't it. It wasn't that. It was the everybody standing up on the desk, it just... there was something missing. I couldn't place it, and it was bothering me, because I understand the symbolism. I understand the power behind it. I get all of the reasons why that is an emotionally evocative scene. There was something ethereal that I could not place that was missing in it, and it bogged me. My favorite scene has to be
so many.
It's definitely one of the classroom. No. It was the play. It was the play. And seeing... it's either that or when he gets cast. No, it's when he gets cast. It's his excitement and his just genuine just elation that he was cast in the show. And just seeing all that passion and him running around and getting everybody else involved and how excited he is. And how everybody was like being so supportive. I was like... I'm a sucker for someone being excited about something and everyone sticking up for them and being like, yeah, good on you.
The friends being constantly supportive of everybody's art is the best thing ever. Moving. Like, them all showing up to the show and just being like, yeah, dude, like the entire time.
Mr. Keating going with them and chauffeuring them. It was just incredible.
Well, moving right along, John.
So, I got two honorable mentions for my favorites. One is Nwanda decking Cameron.
Yeah.
Because that was just satisfying. Because he instantly ratted himself out.
Yeah.
So, love that part.
Especially Nwanda, because Nwanda got paddled and didn't do it. So it's like, it's very satisfying that he was the one to... you know.
Well, and especially when they were like, if you hit him, you're going to get expelled. And he was like, I don't care. And he hit him anyway.
Second is going to be the Neil and Todd scene over the bridge
with the desk.
Because there is there is so much symbolism in him chucking that desk. Because it shows that he's revoking... it shows him revoking the fact that he's like, man, forget what you're supposed to be. Just, yeah, sure, you get the same thing every year. You get the same hand you're dealt with every day. Make something different with it. This one, I don't see a desk. I see a thing that needs to fly. But
the best friendship scene ever.
That's an honorable mention. The best scene, in my opinion, was poor Knox somehow ending up getting confused for Mutt Sanders' brother.
Oh my gosh!
And them drinking themselves into a stupor and not stopping it. He doesn't fight it. He's going like, guys, I gotta go. He's like, to Mutt Sanders.
It was just so good, them being you're Mutt Sanders' brother, right? And he's like, no. And they're just like, to Mutt Sanders, like not hearing a word he's saying and just going on with it.
In the final moments, whenever it's next to my least favorite, because I actually did forget about that scene with the kissing on the forehead. But even in that scene, the jock doesn't yell, that's Knox. It's like, Mutt Sanders' brother's kissing your girlfriend.
If I may step in for a second, I immediately would like to change my answer to the, I don't even know how I just completely forgot about the desk scene, because looking back, even when I was watching it, I was like, I think this is a perfect scene.
Yeah.
Like, literally, like, the writing is so unbelievably perfect for how that scene goes, and that the progression of him really working himself up into the, no, this is a frisbee, this needs to fly, and then he throws it, and he pats him on the shoulder and goes, don't worry, you'll get one next year. It just,
the punch,
oh right. My god, so perfectly written. Yeah, that I changed my answer immediately.
Now,
thank you for reminding
me. I will
say,
personally, for me, my least favorite moment, just because it's one of my idol actors, and I just hate. Same reason why I hated the scene with Steve Carell in the last movie, did a few backs. I don't like seeing Mr. Keating cry. That didn't feel good.
Yeah.
Seeing him break down and sitting at Neil's desk, I'm like, no, stop it. Next scene. I don't want to see that.
Well, Mimi?
So, least favorite scene, I love every scene. I feel like every scene is there for a reason. So, I was trying to pick the one that's, like, could be taken out and it would still be, like, fine. And it was just the scene of, like, them lining up to kick the ball.
I love that scene.
So, like, I don't know. I was just like, could we take that out? And I feel like the story wouldn't be, like, super heavily impacted. I feel like every other one moved the story along for some reason. Of course, it was, like, every scene's great. But I was just trying to pick one that I was, like, the least impactful for me personally. Mm-hmm. And then I'd say the most, like, less obvious and, like, best moment for me. I think the best moment for me is, like, really sad and tragic, which makes sense, it's the scene of his dad walking down the hall and waking up, and you can tell in his face that he's like the anger, the rage, and he's realizing it as he's walking down, the light's turning on, and then him turning on the light and he already knows, and him immediately regretting, like, just the regret, the pain, and then him telling his wife to stop it.
Yes.
Stop it.
Yes.
And just that whole thing. And then his wife has always just been quiet and submissive and not ever speaking her opinion. Like, the whole thing of, like, this, that was, like, I was like, dang, that's just so, so good. Loved it.
So I just had a thought that is kind of the last thing I want to talk about before we rate it and get out of here, which is, you know, we've all been talking about, you know, that Neil's passing was him trying to escape, but I wonder more if it was one, like, moment of agency against his father as opposed to a full-on actual escape moment, because, like, if you talking about the father coming down the hall and he's angry and he, you know, has all of these, you know, very intense emotions, but even when he sees his son, it is not this visceral, primal thing. Like, he's, the way he says, just my son, as, you know, the way I interpreted that, and maybe that's just my screwed up mental, is that he's almost like, this person that I was supposed to be proud of, this being that I put so much into, like, all of these things. And if it was almost a moment of, like, final defiance for him. But that could be me reading too much into it. But that was a thought that I had when you were talking about it.
Question. I'm sorry. I would like to change my answer. Okay. It's pretty darn close. Okay. I'm sorry. Last thing. I forgot about the moment where it's Neil puts on the crown of Puck. And the cold, he's feeling the cold, the last bit of feeling he probably has is the cold snow blowing into the window. And it's, he's the, basically, he's the martyr, he's the Christ. That's what I saw, he putting on the crown of thorns and going to his martyrdom.
But here's the thing, he took the crown off before he did it.
Yeah, because he didn't want to bloody it.
And well, here's the thing, that's why I think it was escapism, or that escapism, excuse me. That's why I think he was escaping instead of making a statement. I think if he was going to make a statement, he would have wore the crown. And I think him consciously...
I don't know that he would have, because he didn't, just like you said, he would never sully the one thing that he truly loved in his life. The one thing
he didn't want it to get ruined.
I see that argument.
I don't know.
I mean, it's up into interpretation.
It's all conjecture. Exactly. It's not even something I necessarily believe. It was just a thought that occurred while you were saying all of that, that I was like, I wonder if it could be interpreted as this, and maybe it can. I don't know.
Yeah, but I forgot about that moment.
I think it's safe to argue for both.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, out of 10 poems, what would you rate Dead Poets Society?
10 out of 10 poems.
10 out of 10. It's just so good.
9 out of 10.
That's fair.
9.5. Honestly.
I would also like to say, as a closing statement from me, that Samuel's parents, if you're listening to this podcast, I love you very much. And you should be very, very proud of your son for the arguments that he put in this podcast. And so hopefully you can find some loveliness in that he stood up and said, gosh darn it, the parents were right.
I thought you were going to go, and if you want to debate this further, come on Mimi's podcast.
I come on my podcast.
I'm begging you.
I'll go with Tyler with a 9.5. That feels near perfect correct movie to me. Yeah,
near perfect.
Well, Mimi, tell us again where people can find your podcast.
It's on Spotify. It's What Your Mimi Never Told You. It's a fantastical place. I'm about to start season 2 soon. Woo! There's something for everyone. They're very long, so strap in. Just listen to it on your way to work and then on the way back. It's great. One day when I have parents on the podcast, which I will,
season
it's going to be
just going to be
amazing.
All of our parents coming on to your
podcast. Dude, I would love that. Love it.
If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. Mimi is one of the best interviewers I think I've ever seen. Actually go watch her stuff.
Well, she's interviewed every single one of us at this table.
That's true. You can find all our episodes.
Yes, you can find all of our episodes, including many other episodes of her interviewing all people from all walks of life, getting all kinds of different perspectives and stories, and so definitely go check it out. It's really awesome. Aside from that, just a reminder to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artist Entertainment and on Twitter at artist_mad. Visit our website for more information about all of that and everything else we have going on. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests that we should review in the future, you can DM us on Instagram or email us at bannerbox.madartists@gmail.com. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. It helps us out a ton, and we will see y'all. Should we pull?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where's the box?
Ooh,
I was about to ask if anybody interrupt you.
Yes, and next up is going to be Return of the King.
And then this one?
And then this movie that we're, that we're about
excited
to pull.
Where I'm so excited
it?
For...
Oh, yeah. Samuel, where's the banner
Return
box?
Of the King.
Where box?
All right, let me pause it for a second while we... Pull our next movie from the box.
All right, let's do it. All right, let's do it.
Drum roll, please.
Sorry.
What's in the box?
What's that?
Is it yours?
No. Pause it.
Mimi, what is it?
It is red. Samuel's request.
Does anybody know what that stands for?
Retired Extremely Dangerous.
Let's go. A just fun action movie that's a bunch of old actors kicking ass, and it's so much fun.
Well,
Bruce Willis, Morgan Freeman, Helen Mirren, John Malkovich.
All right, I'm ready.
It's so much fun.
So that's
buckle
the
up
next one that we'll be doing after Return of the King, so tune in for that, and we will see y'all next time. Bye!
Bye.